I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee. We do have a quorum set.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the minutes of the February 11, 2019 meeting.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. The first bill that we have on the agenda is authored by Representative Hansen. Representative Olson, would you care to move the division report? And this is the bill dealing with Minlars. Representative Olson. Yep.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Division Report on House File 861.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Hansen, would you be willing to move your bill and then give us a quick overview?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 861 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Registrar.
Motion is before us. And Representative Hansen, I think you have an author's amendment to put it in the form that you'd like to present it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. I would move the A-29 amendment. The A-29 amendment, Mr. Chair, does two things. There is a provision in existing law that says that the Oversight Committee needs to review all of the distributions of dollars, and what this amendment does is it strikes that provision relating to this these monies so that the money can get distributed to the deputy registrars promptly and to Minlars. The second is that there's a provision on page 3 of 861 where it talks about expenses by the deputy registrars, and this strikes the provision that says that the amount must be in excess of the amount appropriated for grants. So I would move the A-29 amendment.
Okay, Representative Hansen, a minor correction in your motion. We thought that the number was A-29, but it's actually an A-28 amendment, but it's the same language that you moved.
Okay.
So Representative Hansen moves the author's amendment, the A-29 that he just described, or A-28, yeah. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Hansen, if you'd care to go over the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House File 861, as amended, does two things. It provides money for the continuation of the improvements with Minlars. It is the governor's recommendation for Minlars funding, and it also provides money to the deputy registrars for costs that they have incurred during the implementation of Minlars. We have had a year and a half ongoing discussion on Minlars. We are at the same point we were about a year ago where the dollars run out. We have contractors that are working on the improvements and the programming. And so there is some urgency here in order to get this done by March 5th so that we can retain those workers to improve the programming to make sure that we can get Minlars functioning not only for the deputy registrars but for Minnesotans. So this is I think it's key that this is in fiscal year 2019. It is a deficiency appropriation for this fiscal year. It is not the budget request that will be coming. It's the dollars that are being asked for the programming now to improve Minlars and to get $10 million out to the deputy registrars. I do want to point out there are two provisions that were added in the Transportation Committee that I took in working with Representative Kosnick to provide some protection for the taxpayers for a clawback provision if a deputy registrar went out of business, and a liability protection if they agree to take the money. And that, Mr. Chair, is the bill.
Okay. Members, we do have amendments in the packet, I think my intent would be to take the amendments next and then questions after we've taken the amendments of the author on the bill. So the first one that happens to be in my packet, at least, is the A22. Representative Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just arrived on a somewhat interesting trip to the city this morning. Conditions in southern and southwestern Minnesota are less than ideal, as you might know.
I am surprised that we've got as many people here as when I drove in. I was wondering, I was thinking, my gosh, are we going to be able to get a quorum with all the weather reports and so on? So you did make it, so very good.
Well, I would have been on time, Mr. Chair, except just as I got into Eagan, I ran across an accident. So, yeah. Or I almost did. Ahead of me anyway. So.
I think Representative Garofalo had his hand up. Representative Garofalo?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just really quick, I did not get a fiscal note in my packet. I did not see one online last night.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, there is no fiscal note for this bill because the appropriations are obvious. It's the $12,268,000 on line 1.8, the $3,472,000 on 1.18, and then the $10 million on line 2.7. It's a total of $30,740,000, but there's no need for a fiscal note because those are the numbers.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman. Mr.
Mark, Representative Groffler, I was just going to say that's the way under both caucuses we operate. If we have the numbers in the bill, then there's not a need for the fiscal note.
And you're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. And I was two things I was confused about is, number one, is this all general fund?
Mr. Mark?
Mr. Okay. Chair, Representative Groffler, yes.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, my confusion was I thought some of these were dedicated funds, so that's where the confusion from that came from. But second of all is that we have some of the finance divisions that are currently doing overviews for finance accounts that are not residing in their committee's jurisdiction based off of the list that we were given of what finance accounts are where. And so sometimes if we seem a little bit confused about where these dollars are coming from, that's why we're kind of scrutinizing it.
And Representative Croft, if they're doing overviews, then they haven't been appropriating any dollars yet other than what's currently before us. Some of the bills have multiple jurisdictions, and so they may be beginning in one committee and would be referred to another that would actually carry the money in the bill.
And Mr. Chairman,
and that'll be clear as we move along.
And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to ask about this. I know we have a big agenda today, so I want to just be brief. But
no, they're good questions.
Yep. So we have had bills that appropriate money that have gone from one finance division to another with just the allocation for the appropriation coming from the general fund. And my recollection is that when a bill passes out of a committee with an appropriation and the fund listed, that general fund is part of their jurisdiction, that then counts against their target. That is how I understood it, that it didn't take the Ways and Means Committee to pass that appropriation before it would count against their target. It seems to be that at least one committee that I'm on, they're operating off of a different premise now, that a division can pass appropriations in their financial jurisdiction, but it doesn't count against their target until it comes out of Ways and Means. And so that's why I was asking about this, and we can follow up on that other stuff later. There's no reason to answer that now, but there is. I do have a little bit of confusion about how a bill can pass out of a division but not count against their target.
Well, they'll be counting against their target. Maybe we can talk offline to get a clearer picture of which division you may be talking about or what bill, but if they're passing a bill out of their division and it's one of the accounts that they have, then it would count against their target. And while we're on it, by the way, these bills ultimately will count against the targets that we're passing here today, and the chairs are aware of that.
Okay.
When they pass out a bill. So
we're on the same page, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, but if we need some clarification, I'm happy to work with you on that. Okay, we have the Your questions were good to give Representative Torkelson a chance to get settled in, being that he just arrived. Representative Torkelson, I think you have all four of the amendments that we have to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And, one that I had announced apparently as you were coming in just happened to be the first in my packet was the A-22.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think I'd like to start with the A-25, if that's okay.
That's fine with me. A-25, then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson, would you care to make a motion?
Yeah, I would move the A-25.
Okay, the A-25 amendment is before us. Explanation of the
amendment? Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will make this brief, as I also have a couple of bills up in education as we speak, so someone decided I should have a very busy morning, I guess. Anyway, the A-25 really addresses two important issues within the bill. Line 1.3 of the A-25 raises the amount of money that would be allocated to reimburse or strengthen our deputy registrars from $10 million to $27 million. This is $27 million actually reflects what their losses actually have been up to this point. There's been quite a bit of conversation and study around this issue, and as we all know, the Minlar's rollout has been certainly less than ideal, but the major impact of this rollout, besides the impact on our own citizens of them not being able to get the services they need, the other major impact has been on the deputy registrars. These are the folks that are at the front line. They're at the desk talking to the citizens that need their services and aren't able to get them, so they often take the heat. But more importantly, this program has required them to do a lot of extra work, more time at the counter with each transaction. Many transactions require multiple visits to the office in order to get them completed. So all in all, they've spent a lot of extra time. This has resulted either in lost revenue, in some cases, in other cases, just a lot of extra expense, hiring help, and getting a lot to get all this work accomplished, and has put some of these folks at the point where they could go very easily go out of business because their business has been threatened by the extra load that's been put upon them. So this change from $10 million to $27 million reflects the actual amount of money that we believe that these folks have lost. The formula for distribution would be the same. The second line of this amendment deletes a couple of provisions within the bill that we believe are unnecessary at this point, especially because this is looking back, not looking forward. One provision requires Deputy Registrar to stay in business in order to receive this compensation. The other one would limit their ability to use the court system for any additional recovery. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions.
Okay. Representative Hansen, any advice on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would oppose the A-25 amendment. I think $10 million is a lot of money. Again, this is this fiscal year deficiency payment. In addition, the provisions that were being deleted were for taxpayer protection that were actually recommended by Representative Kosnick, and I accepted working with those to kind of make this a bipartisan effort so we're protecting the taxpayers when we're distributing the dollars. The deputy registrars, I agree, provide an important service and have been dealing with the frustration both from the citizens but also in trying to make the system work. But I would oppose the A-25 amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? I'd like to point out one thing in addition to what Representative Hansen, when we were putting the bill together, I did contact MMB, and I actually have a memo in my hand here where they said the number he, meaning myself, is looking for is $10 million even for the deputy registrars. So that's the recommendation that I received from MMB in terms of the amount needed. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Torkelson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I request a roll call on the amendment.
Okay, the roll call has been requested. Any other discussion? Thank Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, you can defer to nonpartisan staff on this if you want, but what was the amount that we appropriated last year, the Governor Dayton vetoed the standalone bill on this. What was that amount of money, do you recall?
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Graffler, are you asking about Minlar's or are you asking about the deputy registrar compensation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, it's the amount that we recognize the state imposed a loss on these private businesses through no fault of their own, that portion of the appropriation. And that was a standalone bill that was kind of separate from everything else. Do you remember what does nonpartisan staff or Mr. Hansen know what that amount was?
I would defer to nonpartisan staff. Mr. Lee.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, the standalone deputy registrar bill that was on the House floor had $9 million from the special revenue funds for deputy registrar reimbursements. And then the conference agreement on Senate file 3656 had $5 million in fiscal 2019 for deputy registrar reimbursements.
So, Mr. Chairman, so that's $14 million then all in?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Graffler, that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, and I mean, there was bipartisan agreement on the $14 million. I don't know why Governor Dayton vetoed that bill, but it had strong bipartisan support. Is there any indication that the costs imposed by these businesses are now lower than they were when we passed this last year?
Mr. Lee, any more information?
Mr. Chair. So I think the key distinction here is that those dollars were out of the special revenue account, which would have drained that account, and I think that's what, and the lack of the connection in with the Minlar's funding at the time was what, I don't want to speak for former Governor Dayton, but I think that's what precipitated the veto. We're doing this, the bill that's in front of you is general fund dollars as a deficiency to cover some of those expenses. This is the current governor's recommendation, and I support it.
Yeah. And Representative Graffler, going back to what MMB provided us, you know, I can't speak to the dollar amount in the previous legislation, but just the other day when I was putting the bill together and working with our author, they gave me the number $10 million. So that would be the most recent communication that that we have. If further information is forthcoming, we can deal with it, I suspect, at that time. But right now, that's what MMB is recommending.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll be voting in favor of the Torkelson Amendment and encourage members of the committee to do so. And what I'm hopeful of is that this is sort of, we're setting ourselves up to reach an agreement with the Senate on this. These costs, the people who bore the cost of this, really, it was not their fault at all. I mean, this was a government-imposed problem on people, and my recollection on this is that we had pretty strong bipartisan consensus on this, withstanding Governor Dayton's veto on it. So I'm just hoping as this goes forward, this is more setting the table for negotiations with the Senate and not a hard and fast number. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, Representative Perkins.
Well, thank you. I just would like to reemphasize that, you know, these costs were incurred at no fault of their own. They have tried to do their work as well as they can, but yet have been unable to do it because the state supplied them with a computer program that was incapable of doing the work that needed to be done. This amount, the higher amount, is much more appropriate. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and members, I would only say that the $10 million was recommended by MMB, and I think that probably everybody at the table here recognizes that the deputy registrars need to be reimbursed. The only question seems to be what the appropriate amount is, but this amendment puts a significant number of dollars, $10 million, into resolving the concerns that we have with the deputy registrars. So with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Carlson.
No.
Vice Chair Olson.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Albright.
Yes.
Representative Bernardi.
No.
Representative Davids. Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hausman. Representative Hertas.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Long.
No.
Representative Mariani. Representative Markhart.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Neuer.
No.
Representative Pawlowski. Representative Poppy.
No.
Representative Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Scott. Representative Torkelson.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Okay, being 9 ayes and 14 nays, the motion is defeated. Representative Torkelson, you have some additional amendments. Which one would you like to take next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to take the 827.
Okay, if you'd like to move the amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the 827.
The motion is before us, if you'd like to explain the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is similar to the A25 that was just defeated, but it removes the financial portion of the amendment and sticks only to the more legal-type provisions that are in this amendment. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV. I do have a daughter who's in law school, but she did not advise me on this particular provision. I just believe that we are venturing into places that we do not belong in this particular situation, and I would urge members to vote yes on this provision.
Okay, Representative, any advice to the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the bill did, with these provisions, did go through the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division, and there was a thorough discussion on that. I would oppose the A27 amendment. Again, these are the provisions recommended by Representative Kosnick for taxpayer protection.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion failed. Representative Torkelson, which one would you like to take next?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got to get a hold of it. I'm going to do the A26, Mr. Chair.
The A26 yes. Amendment, Representative Torkelson, would you care to make a motion?
I would like to move the A26, but I'd like to make an oral amendment to get in the shape I would like.
Okay. If you could tell us what that oral
Thank amendment you, Mr. Chair. On line 1.3, strike $27 million and insert $14.5 million.
Okay, everybody have the change in the amendment? Okay, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll request a roll call on this also. We've already made the arguments here. We revealed that the $14.5 million is what we actually approved last year, even though it was not did not make it into law. This is about a little over half of the $27 million, and I would remind members that when we voted on this $14.5 million last year, that was not the end of the story. This story has continued well to the present day, and these continued extra costs are being incurred by these deputy registrars as we move forward. If $14.5 million was enough some months ago, it's less than enough now, but it's more than the $10 million. We've also had some rollouts in this program, the last one being the 1.15. Information I've been getting back from deputy registrars is that, yes, they've added some functionality to the program, but nothing has really been done, or very little has been done, to help speed up the process for the deputy registrars. There still are a number of workarounds just to get the work done. They have these official workarounds, and deputy registrars have their own unofficial workarounds, just ways that they can sneak around this program and get their work done. But every bit of that takes extra time. Time is money, Mr. Chair. I strongly urge folks to vote for the 826.
Okay, the motion is before us, and I assume then you just simply incorporated that 14.5 in your amendment.
Yes, 14.5 instead of 27. Thank you.
Okay, that's incorporated. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would oppose the 826 amendment as it's been modified. I think, as Representative Torkelson said, this is a work in progress. Last year's bill did not become law. What we have in front of us is a $10 million appropriation from the general fund as a deficiency. There will be plenty of time for discussions on the budget proposals, but the $10 million in general fund, I believe, is appropriate at this time, and I would oppose the amendment.
Okay, any further discussion? Yeah, the roll call was requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Chair Carlson.
No.
Vice Chair Olson.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Albright.
Yes.
Representative Bernardi.
No.
Representative Davids. Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Drazkowski.
Aye.
Representative Eklund.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
No.
Representative Hausman.
No.
Representative Hertas.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Long.
No.
Representative Mariani. Representative Markhart.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Neuer.
No.
Representative Pawlowski. Representative Poppy.
Yes.
Representative Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Scott. Representative Torkelson.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Okay, being 10 aye and 14 nay, the motion is defeated. Representative Torkelson, there's one more amendment in the file.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to offer the last amendment.
Okay, the A22 then is withdrawn. We do have a correction, as I understand it, recommended by staff.
Mr. Chair, members, on the A28 amendment, there is a reference to the laws 2018, Chapter 101, and I would recommend we amend that amendment by further specifying. So it should read Laws 2018, Chapter 1, Section 4, Subdivision 5. So the amendment is to insert Section 4, Subdivision 5.
So we can just, Mr. McCormick, treat that as a separate amendment. Any discussion, any questions of Mr. McCormick?
I would, Mr. Chair, I would move that correction.
Okay. The author moves the amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'd ask for your support for the motion for House File 861 as amended. I renew my motion that House File 861 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay. Mr. Marks wanted to point something out from a previous point that he made. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, members, when I stated earlier the total spending of the bill was $30,740,000, I couldn't read my writing. It should be $25,740,000. It's $25,740,000. So sorry about that.
So the record will reflect the correct amount if anybody listens to the tape and so on. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if the question is for the author, Mr. Marks, or I guess maybe the author. The two, quote, deficiency funding requests for the government here, which has a 10-year history of dragging Minnesotans and their wallets through this horrible process that they have forced upon the people of Minnesota. This deficiency, these two deficiency sections here, Section 1 and 2, both are one-time appropriations available until June 30th of 2021. Representative Hansen, if indeed it is a, quote, deficiency for the government, it seems to me that this is a deficiency that exists now, not a year and a half from now or whatever that amount of time is. Why are we extending their use to June 30th of 2021?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski. If you look at the bill, it has these appropriations are coming from this fiscal year, which ends on June 30th. You will be dealing with contractors who may last longer than their contracts may last longer than June 30th. So you've got to, and I could refer to the Minute staff, who I believe are in the audience, to explain that if needed. But that's general. The general appropriation is to have it last until that is needed, rather than having an extension to cover the life of that potential contract.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Hansen, as you mentioned as you began your presentation, this doesn't include the department's request coming forward. So they're going to request money in the general operating budget for the next biennium. In addition to this bill, which has been characterized by you and others as deficiency. So I'm really confused. If there is a deficiency, the deficiency should exist right now. And so this appears to me to be additional money disguised as a deficiency that will allow the department to double up on their appropriation somehow. Can we hear from the department on that?
Well, that would be fine. If somebody that can come forward. I see somebody coming forward now. By the way, just so folks are aware, testimony has been given in the divisions, but we always, a tradition of both caucuses, when it's before Ways and Means, if somebody has a question of somebody in the audience, that would be very much in order. So if you could restate your question, and then if you could identify yourself, sir.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. John Eichten, Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota IT Services, and I did catch the question, okay. If you'd like me just to respond. So, excuse me, I came over quick. As Representative Hansen mentioned, we do have this is a team of contractors who are currently working on the MNLARS project. We also have a contract with FAST Enterprises for the driver side of the system. So this is the system that was stood up in October of last year to accommodate the Real ID law. Both of those, the invoices may not come in until after the close of fiscal 19. However, we need the money, the appropriation in place in order for folks to work against that funding. So the $5.5 million that's included in this request for FAST Enterprises, the date for that payment in the current contract is July 2nd of 2019, so that's in fiscal year 20. However, we can't have them working on phase two without the certainty of funding, and so we did put in the suggest that language be included to keep these dollars available in the next fiscal year, so we didn't get into a situation where FAST completes their work in early July and we're unable to pay them because the fiscal year 19 money canceled.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Eichten, what is the amount of the contract that's due on July 2nd?
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, $5.5 million, assuming we move forward with Phase 2, which is the plan with this bill.
And Mr. Drazkowski. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Eichten, so in that amount is due on July 2nd. Is that correct? Is there any reason the department would pay it on July 3rd or 4th or any time later than that?
Mr. Eichten.
Mr. Chair, we will pay when the work gets done. So if the work is not done on July 2nd, the payment won't be made.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Eichten, would you expect that that instead of July 2nd of 2019, that it would take a full 2 years later, nearly a full 2 years later, up to June 30th of 2021 for the work to get done and the contract to be paid?
Mr. Chair, no, I would not. I expect the work to get done during fiscal year 20.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, according to the testimony from the Deputy Commissioner, it sounds like we are extending this time much too far, and we should look at some sort of amendment in order to correct the bill.
Mr. Eichten.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, that's the legislature's prerogative. I believe when we drafted the original language, we simply timed it to the end of the next biennium when all appropriated dollars for 20 and 21 would cancel back to the fund of origin. That said, I think you know, It should be noted that in the last session, the early deficiency funding that was provided, that was the last of the funding that went to Minlars, and we had to reform our strategy to make that funding last as long as it possibly could, get the most value out of it. Those dollars allowed us to get to mid-March of this year, and that leaves us in the situation we're in now with the ramp down.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Acton testified that $5.5 million is a total amount that's due on July 2nd. Mr. Acton, what about the other $3.472 million? When is that due?
Mr. Acton.
Mr. Chair, it will be due as invoices come in from the contractors. So there's a generally about a 30 to 45 day lag between the work being completed for a particular deliverable, invoice being received, and payment going out. So of that 3.742, we can't say right now. It's all going to depend on the timing of invoices from the contracting companies. There are multiple contracting companies that we're working with.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Acton, so you testified that the total amount that is due on July 2nd is $5.5 million, and so the $3.472 million, do you expect that that is going to become due in 2019, 2020, or 2021 fiscally?
Commissioner Acton.
Mr. Chair, under the current roadmap, a portion of that remaining amount of money would likely come due during fiscal year 19, and a portion would go out the door in early fiscal year 20, assuming we stick to the current rate and pace of work.
Thank you, Mr. Acton. So, Mr. Chair, could I offer an oral amendment to change the two dates of 2021, both in sections 1 and 2, to 2020?
You could offer that amendment.
I'd offer that amendment, Mr. Chair.
We will take... you know, we have a 24-hour rule, but I think the tradition of this committee has been, although I wouldn't describe this as a minor amendment, but at least in terms of the wording, it's relatively short, so we'll accept it. Representative Hansen, any advice on the well, by the way, did everybody get the amendment? Make sure everybody has it. Apparently they do. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, you were saying on 1.15 to June 30th, 2020. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, based on advice from staff here that they say that would be doable.
And Mr. Chair, the other part of that was... Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the other part was 1.21, the very same change at the very end of that line.
And, Mr. Chair, the vice of staff, they say that also would be doable.
So
I would support the oral amendment for June 30th, 2020 on lines 1.15 and 1.21.
Okay. So the amendment is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Hansen for all the work he's done on this. We've had several hearings in the Transportation Committee on Minlars and Deputy Registrar-related items, and we've heard a lot of testimony, and this bill really strikes a balance between getting this money out in a timely way to make sure that we can retain the private sector contractors that are working on Minlars and getting some money out to the deputy registrars, which is an urgent matter. I also wanted to let you know, Mr. Chair and other members, that the governor has been very engaged as well as the executive branch. We've had three meetings in the last month with him on a bipartisan basis with members of the House and Senate, both parties. And I'm very pleased that this is being taken seriously, and I think this legislation, you know, comes out of those conversations. So this is, I think, the first of perhaps several Minlars-related items that we address, but it's the most immediate and most urgent, and I urge a yes vote on House File 861 as amended.
Okay, Representative Hanson, would you? Oh, do we have?
Representative Bernardi had.
Oh, Representative Bernardi.
Okay, thank you, Chair Carlson. I just wanted to give a shout out to all the staff that worked with the people in our communities to do the best job they could. I've met with a lot of them and with my community and keep close contact with them, and they really did an amazing effort and put in a lot of, sacrificed a lot of their personal and home time, and I really appreciate what they did and want to thank them for that. So thank you.
Okay, Representative Hanson, would you care to renew your motion?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 861 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So House File 861 as amended is recommended to be on the General Register.
Thank you.
And with that, thank you, and we'll move to the next bill on the agenda, which is House File 70, authored by Representative Kunesh Podim.
Yes.
And Representative Olson, would you? Is the author not here? But I saw her earlier. Yeah. Representative Poppy, are you ready with yours? I guess we've got a lengthy agenda, so we want to keep moving. Representative Poppy.
Yes, I'd like to move adoption of the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division Report on House File 232.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Poppy.
I'd also like to move House File 232 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? We should hear the bill, though.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 232 actually provides jumpstart funding to add capacity and services to our stressed and struggling Minnesota farm families by using unexpended 2019 dollars from the AGRI, which is Agricultural Growth Research and Innovation Program within the Minnesota Department of Ag's budget. Request for additional funding spent in a similar way was included in last year's omnibus finance bill. We expect to have money addressing this ongoing issue included in the next budget cycle, but these are a current need, unencumbered dollars, so we are looking to get some one-time spending done. The season is the reason for seeking funds today. As winter turns to spring, farmers may be finding their plans to continue financing their business curtailed or derailed. The time is now to provide additional resources to support them throughout their decision-making process. Losing hope is the greatest concern within the ag community. If a farmer doesn't see a positive outcome or an improved outlook, they run the risk of making unhealthy decisions. House File 232 provides a bridge to hope and a chance for a brighter tomorrow. House File 232 will spend $100,000 in four ways. $30,000 of the funds will be used to increase marketing and promotion of available resources, including the Minnesota Farm and Rural Helpline. The Minnesota Department of Ag is also developing radio public service announcements with the intention of airing them throughout ag country. Preventing suicides is of deep concern. MDA will continue to train lenders, co-op managers, regional extension educators, farm business management instructors, and other interested parties who interact with farmers and farm families. Additionally, $15,000 will be spent on increasing the number of farm advocates and/or farmer lender mediators throughout Minnesota. There are currently 10 farm advocates contracted by the Department of Ag who provide a minimum of 55 hours a month and up to 150 hours a month. Their expertise in matching farmers with resources is keen. They are often the first call for assistance. University of Minnesota Extension administers the Farmer Lender Mediation Program. Both of these efforts saw their beginnings during the mid-1980s during that farm crisis. Ted Matthews is the solo mental health provider available at no charge to farmers at risk of reaching the breaking point. He would receive an additional $15,000 in compensation. This money would allow him to train and transition a second therapist into providing similar service. Mr. Matthews has traveled all over the state and speaks to numerous groups and agencies to enlighten them about how to work with a farmer in crisis. He's available 24/7 by phone or by traveling to the farm or home. He works to engage local behavioral health agencies with the farmers experiencing mental health concerns. And lastly, $40,000 would be used to send dollars to the Centers of Excellence of the Minnesota State System in Central Lakes College in Brainerd and South Central College in Mankato to contract with someone to become the second statewide mental health therapist. This would allow better coverage and support. In the mid-1980s, there was a financial crisis which hit farmers hard and sent them to protests in St. Paul and Washington, D.C. Many lost their farms and some took their lives. Today, we are in another farm crisis. The time is now to do what we can to reduce stress and provide resources and increase support to farmers and farm families. I respectfully ask for your support in moving House File 232 to the House floor for consideration. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would simply like to say thank you, Chair Poppe, for your leadership on this and working very closely with Representative Deb Keel. She's been a champion on this issue, as you know, as well. This is much needed and greatly appreciated, and I'd simply ask for your support. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I renew my motion that House File 232 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you.
The House File then will be placed on the general register. House File 70. No. Oh, the next bill is 70. Yeah, okay. And is Representative Kunesh-Bodine here? We almost missed you a few minutes ago.
I ran up from downstairs really quick, so thanks for letting me catch my breath.
Representative Poppe punched.
She did a good job.
Punched
Thank
in
you.
For you. That isn't correct, but covered for you.
Appreciate
by taking
that.
Her bill up. Let's see, Representative Olson.
Yeah, I move, Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Division Report on House File 70.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion carried. Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I move House File 70 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you'd care to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, excuse me, you did have an amendment first. You should get it in the order that you'd like. So.
Okay.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I move the amendment coded the A3 amendment.
Okay, and now if you could explain the amendment.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. So my amendment adds an additional 9 more members to this task force, and it increases the cost of this task force, this biennial task force, from $100,000 to $150,000.
Okay, and if you maybe could mention as to the reason for the change, what's taking place there?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Originally, this task force requested 2 members from Native tribes to be seated on the task force. The governor requested that we have 11 members, one representing each of the tribes around the state on this task force, which I agreed to willingly and in accordance with the budget from the governor, coming from the governor, we increased it from the 100 to 150 to accommodate those additional members.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
If you would explain the bill.
Yes. So this task force creates a group to address violence against Indigenous women, and it defines the standards and the requirements for the task force. So one of the things, the first thing that they'll have to do is create the duties. Mr. Chair, maybe you can help me with this. I haven't testified before this group before. Would you like me to go through the expenditure and revenue formula specifically, or just a general overview?
Well, I think give us an idea of what the intent of the bill is, and then touch on the funding part of it, being that this
okay.
Ways and Means.
So this task force will create a group to examine and report on issues addressing the systematic causes behind violence against indigenous women. It will then go on to recommend appropriate methods for tracking and collecting that data. It will act as a liaison between government policies and institutions that impact violence against our indigenous women. And then it will recommend appropriate measures that address the violence and assist victims and their families. So the membership includes, and if you look on the fiscal note, if you have it there, there is $5,521 for each of the quarterly Metro meetings, and that would cover things like travel and meals, lodging, any kind of refreshments, child care if the members have young children, and there is an expectation of 4 meetings a year. So that would equal, come to about $22,000, a little over $22,000. We would also have that same amount for quarterly meetings in Greater Minnesota. And then, of course, we will require a printed report at the end. And so there are expenses for supplies and photocopying and printing of the report. And it is assumed that the OJP will contract with a consultant at a cost of about $53,896. And the Department of Public Safety, tribal liaison agreed to provide 10.7% of their time for 15 months in consultation, and that comes to $14,252. And then there are also travel expenses that are reimbursed, and so all done at the end of the 2 years, there is an expectation of about $150,000.
Okay, the bill then is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Wilson. Oh, Representative Dabney.
My apologies, Mr. Chair. I got my hand up late. Representative Kunesh-Podein, thank you for the bill. This is long-awaited light being shown on this issue. One area I would ask that the task force look at is school dropouts. The schools report attendance in October, and I've had members of law enforcement raise concerns about children who are present the following spring and then not recorded as present anywhere in our MARS system. Mm-hmm. In the fall, following fall, even though they had not graduated, and concerns about what has happened to those children. And certainly some of them have moved out of state, have done other things, but members of law enforcement have raised concerns about some number of them may be the very sort of girls that you're looking to draw more attention to and protect with this effort. And so I would urge that to happen for their best welfare. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Care to comment?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. I think that is definitely one of the things that will be an identifying marker as far as who goes missing. I think there are, that's a well-known sort of phenomena in this whole realm of missing women, missing children, and as a natural consequence of this task force and through the investigation and looking at data, missing data, I think that will probably be a very good indicator of where we're having a problem with the loss of our communities. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I like this bill, Representative, and thank you for bringing it.
The task forces that I've been on before always have, it seems like they come from one of the departments. There's a representative from one of the departments that has been part of that. And I'm not asking you to do that here, but one of the reasons that it works well is that then we have somebody from that department that can compile the report at no charge. And so I'm just wondering, who do you foresee putting this report together? Is that an outside entity, or is that someone, do you have someone pegged in one of the departments to do that?
Representative Konish-Budim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I think that will be one of the plans when it comes to the consultant and how we're going to put this task force together and how we're going to create that the working groups between all the different agencies. And I do believe that it is the commissioner, where do I have that? I'm sorry, I have to find my bill here. The commissioner, so it would be the commissioner, I believe, of public safety and criminal justice.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Olson.
I renew my motion that House File 70 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So House File 70 is on its way to Government Operations.
Thank you.
The next bill is House File 679. Great, Representative Morrison. Okay, we have this one was in Representative Liebling's division. Representative Liebling?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move adoption of the Health and Human Services Finance Division report on House File 679.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Liebling?
And then, Mr. Chair, thank you. I move that House File 679 be recommended to be placed on the general register. And, Mr. Chair, there is an amendment that we should probably move right now, I think.
Yeah, if that's an amendment to put it in the order that the author would like. So, Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A1 amendment to House File 679, and that just adds the appropriation to the bill.
Okay. And the appropriation is in the amount of?
And, Mr. Chair, and that is in the amount of
$470,000.
Okay,
just so we're clear for the record what the amendment is. Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 679 addresses an urgent need to assure funding for the Children's Residential Mental Health Services in May and June of this year, 2019. State funds were appropriated in the 2017 budget passed in special session to sustain Children's Residential Mental Health Services in anticipation of an IMD designation by CMS. Unfortunately for the math to work out, for the special session agreement, 2 months of the biennium, May and June of 2019, were left unfunded in anticipation of funding those two remaining months in the 2018 session. Though there was broad bipartisan agreement to fund these 2 months in 2018, funding was vetoed as part of the final omnibus prime spending bill last session. So now the issue is timing. Children and youth needing this level of care, their families, counties responsible to place them for treatment and service providers, all need reassurance that the state will keep its commitment and provide the needed state funding to assure services will be delivered this spring. Passing the needed $470,000 in funding early in the session sends a signal that serving kids in need of intensive mental health treatment is a priority.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrison, thank you for bringing this legislation forward. We heard this in health And I would urge all members to support this initiative. Thank you.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Liebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I renew my motion that House File 679 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. House File 679, then, will be placed on the General Register. Thank you.
Thank you.
And our next bill will be House File 47, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move adoption of the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division Report on House File 47.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House File 47 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, that motion is before us. And Representative Anderson, if you would explain the bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Good to be here. My driveway is a mile long and didn't get plowed this morning and got through with my pickup, and now it's running like it's got square tires. So good to be here. This is the AFRAC extension bill. AFRAC stands for the Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council. It's been in existence for about 10 years. It's a 12-person council made up of, I think, nearly all the commodity groups in the state, as well as some crop production retailers and some independent crop consultants as well. And the funding for this organization is actually a farmer-driven organization in terms of funding. There's a 40-cent per ton checkoff, if you will, on each ton of bulk fertilizer purchased by farmers and anybody else who want to use bulk fertilizer in the state. And been around since actually 2009 is when the council was established. They've been around now for 10 years. That's the reason for hopefully the extension of the AFRAC council. And with the increased use and such, they take in now about $1 million a year based on the tonnage of fertilizer used in any particular year, and provide funding for a lot of good projects. And the main reason is to advance soil fertility research, technology development, and education in the wise use of fertilizer. And that gets into the economics and also environmentally, to make sure that the fertilizer is used in the right way, the right amounts, the right places, to get it done in the most economically and environmentally sound way possible. So with it, Mr. Chair, I would encourage the committee to look favorably on this extension that would keep the program going for another 10 years.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, I appreciate your bringing up the question of environmental sustainability, but at this point, we have so many public wells being contaminated with nitrogen, and personally, a bigger worry for me is all the families that have wells that are testing over the health risk limit for nitrogen. It's over two. The Department of Health, Ag has identified 2,000, and it's easy to look at the number of wells in those particular townships and figure out it's probably about 6,000 families that have wells that have nitrogen above the health risk limit. So what is happening now isn't working. What do you expect the council to be doing to remedy this situation?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. One of the top priorities of the council is to work in the area of nitrogen fertilizer. We all know that anhydrous ammonia may be gradually being phased out of ag production and moving to more soluble forms of nitrogen. It's high on the list of this AFRAC council to fund projects that work on exactly what you're saying, the wise use of nitrogen. That would include things such as Y drops, which not getting into the weeds too much here, but drops the fertilizer in small amounts along the row edges as you go through a cornfield in just the right amounts. They call it spoon feeding, and it's projects like that that are receiving research from not only this council but others at work, university and clean water fund, that type of thing as well. So there is research being done in that area.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, what are you thinking is the timeline here for protecting families? That's half the question. And the other half, what about the families that now, through no fault of their own, have wells that are above the health risk limit? What is the council recommending? What help is the council recommending for those families?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, I can't speak directly for the council. I was told this was going to focus mainly on the financial aspects of this bill. But I would assure you that they are working on the situation. And it didn't occur overnight. It's not going to be solved overnight as well. And with the gradual diminished use of fertilizer and the judicious use of it, I would expect and hope to see, we all would, those situations and those of higher nitrate levels decreasing. But again, I can't sit here and tell you for sure that's what's going to happen.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay, thanks. That was one half of the question. The other half is, what about the families that now have wells over the health risk limit? What plans does, or what help is the council giving those?
Representative Anderson.
Well, again, Mr. Chair and Representative, I think that's beyond the scope of my testimony today. The Department of Ag has implemented or will implement the nitrogen rule, which is going to look specifically at what you are discussing this morning. And as far as specific plans that the council has to look at those areas, I can just tell you that they put out an RFP every year and will decide on projects that they see fit that would address the problems that that you are speaking about. But I can't give you specific numbers as to what is going to happen to the families who already have this situation. And again, hopefully it will begin to decrease. That's the best that I can offer you.
Yeah, and make it, I mean, I should make something clear. We do accept questions that develop a better understanding of the issue or the legislation, and I think that's the direction that Representative Wagenius was going. Representative Wagenius, did you have any further? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, my question to the bill. In the last committee stop, I mentioned that it would be valuable if it actually, the purpose was amended to include but not limited to water quality research. Because to be clear, this council is for production research. And even during the last hearing, when I asked about urban or suburban fertilizer use, the testifiers didn't know that they were being, that they were taxing the urban or suburban fertilizer use, and that urban and suburban fertilizer use were not getting any research dollars from this because it was only going to agricultural research. So I think, Mr. Chair, this motion is to send it to government operations. Is that correct? So I think there's some more work to be done. The final piece I would raise is this is a council where direct authority is given to non-elected people or non-executive branch people. So elsewhere with Outdoor Heritage Council or Clean Water Council, the interests that serve on those councils make recommendations to either the legislature to appropriate the money or to an executive to implement the money. But it's my understanding that this actually has the authority given to unelected individuals to distribute $1 million. And I think that I understand that's what Representative Junkie had when he proposed it. I think after 10 years, it's important to have for accountability actually, and that's a government operations question. I think it's important to have actual accountability to some elected individual for distributing the appropriation of money.
Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative, I agree with the intent of what you say, that there's no purpose to try to deviate away from water quality issues, and the 2015 report from the Department of Ag estimated that around 10% of the projects affected directly the area of water quality. And I mentioned to you in the Ag Committee that I think each of these projects directly or indirectly affects water quality in the sense of the proper use of the fertilizer and minimizing its impact. And I would also say, Mr. Chair, that this $1 million that's raised, it comes from farmers directly. It is a 40 cent per ton checkoff that we all pay when we purchase fertilizer. There was a question asked if bagged fertilizer was subject to this checkoff fee. It is not. It is only bulk fertilizer. And again, the intent is to further research in the proper use of the nutrients, and directly or indirectly, but that's got to improve water quality, in my opinion, in this state.
Okay, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just speak in support of House File 47. I think it's a solutions-focused approach, and I think, you know, we all would like to see things happen yesterday, and when they don't, then we seem to have a concern about what we're doing tomorrow. So what I'd like to just have us all think about is that we do have people who are willing to put forward their own, that they are paying for some support of this. They are, as Representative Anderson has very well stated, they are being taxed in order to be able to fund this research. The research appears to be solutions focused. We can continue to debate, and we likely will continue to debate specifically what this research is going to consist of. But I think that moving forward and toward solutions will help the people that live in the rural area who don't have who in their wells right now have some concerns. We need to try to fix the problem. Certainly, I just want to say to Representative Anderson, I appreciate that he's bringing this forward. I think that it's important for us to have this discussion, but I do support this bill, and I would encourage others to do so.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Hurtas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing this forward. And I would segue on to what Representative Poppy said. What really has come about in the most recent time is the understanding and some of the innovations and technologies that have come forth from efforts like this to understand the proper use of nitrogen, and even products and admixtures that are added to nitrogen to reduce the volatilization so that you're not putting on more than you need to put on the ground, and therefore there's less runoff of nitrogen and not so much entering our waterways and polluting the very things that all of us are concerned about. So I think this is a good effort, and certainly a voluntary one in many respects that farmers have come forth with this. And even lastly, just with regard to the technology, what has changed so much even in my lifetime is that the technology and the equipment during harvest time really maps exactly the yield, not just in a bulk way, but different areas of the field, so that farmers know exactly where they can be saving and not applying nitrogen based on output and yield, and to monitor the production of the farmland so that nitrogen is applied in a proper amount. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I renew my motion that House File 47 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The bill is on its way then to government operations. Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Representative Anderson. We now have House File 129 by Representative Sundin. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the State Government Finance Division Report on House File 129.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, I move that House File 129 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. No amendments, so if you'd explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 129 authorizes public members of the Governor's Council on Developmental Disabilities to receive per diem compensation and reimbursement for certain expenses, which include babysitting. The law authorizes payments, provides for $55 per day per diem on days spent on council activities, expense reimbursements, including child care expenses when authorized by the council, among other activities. This council is directed by law to oversee certain state responsibilities related to persons with developmental disabilities required by the Federal Disabilities Assistance and Bill of Rights Act 2002. That's about it. These people that serve, appointed by the governor and served in the capacity for advising the governor on disability issues, oftentimes have family members that are disabled, and quite possibly some of these committee members are disabled themselves and have special needs for babysitting or other care necessities. And it's my belief that, and Senator Hoffman's as well, that these people should be compensated accordingly.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any further discussion? Representative Nelson?
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 129 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee.
And now we have Representative Zhang.
Mr. Chair, he just stepped out.
He's right there. He's coming down.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Division Report on House File 374.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Olson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House File 374 as amended be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Would you care to explain the bill, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 374 comes to us from the Minnesota Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council. The UI Advisory Council is a bipartisan group that has operated over 20 years. It includes legislators from both political parties, the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and many other business and labor organizations. The UI Advisory Council is also notable because it operates as a consensus model. If any council member opposes a proposal, that proposal is either modified or dropped. Because of this structure, the UI Advisory Council bills are usually non-controversial here at the legislature. House File 374 is a duplicate of the 2018 Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council bill. It passed the Senate last year with a vote of 59-0. On the House side, the bill was incorporated into the omnibus supplemental budget bill and never received a floor vote. The only difference between House File 374 and last year's bill are a few minor technical corrections from Deed, plus one provision struck at the request of legal aid. As with last year's bill, Deed protects House File 374 will have no fiscal impact on UI benefit payouts or UI tax revenues. This bill is... The provisions of the bill are primarily technical or administrative in nature. Administrative costs associated with implementing the bill will be minimal. The costs can be absorbed through the federal UI administrative grants from the United States Department of Labor. The more noteworthy provisions of House 374 include a simplification of the UI tax reporting for employers to operate in multiple states, a modification of employment coverage requested by Hospitality Minnesota, administrative clarification for UI tax reduction law passed in 2016, a limitation on how interest accrues on debts owed to the UI program, and a simplification of the UI-based spirit that will reduce confusion for applicants and reduce paperwork for employers. The bill also makes housekeeping changes to better define terms and make the statute more readable. Most applicants and employers represent themselves in the UI appeals process, so the council has worked to ensure that the average worker or business owner can make sense of UI law. If there are any questions about specific provisions of the bill or their fiscal impact, the staff are here today and would be happy to answer these questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author of the bill. In previous testimony, Representative Zhang, I didn't hear about any costs associated with these technical changes, but in your just completed testimony, you did represent that there were some modest or de minimis costs. Do you have a number in mind in terms of what those might be?
I don't have the number.
Zhang, would you like the department to?
Yes.
Okay. And if you could identify yourself for the record and then hear the question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri, and I'm the director of the Unemployment Insurance Division at Deed. Mr. Chair, members, there are no costs for, there is really no fiscal impact here on this bill whatsoever to the administration of the program.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's reassuring in light of Representative Zhang's maybe in passing suggestion that there might be some costs, but from your testimony, there will be no fiscal impact.
There will be no fiscal impact to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I renew my motion that House File 374 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
And I have Representative Leppard. Thank you for waiting.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move adoption of the Agriculture and Food Finance and Policy Division Report on House File 1267.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Poppe.
I move House File 1267 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you'd like to explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Currently, the Department of Agriculture has an organic advisory task force. This organic advisory task force has been in existence since 2003, and it's made up of a variety of stakeholders in the organic agriculture industry. It does good work. It advises the Commissioner of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota on matters pertaining to the organic agriculture industry and promotion of that industry. Periodically, the task force needs to be extended, and that's what this bill does. It simply extends the organic advisory task force through 2024. And in the past, the Department of Agriculture has absorbed the costs associated with this task force and will continue to do so going forward. And those costs are roughly $4,800.
Okay, any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Poppe.
I renew my motion that House File 1.
Representative Drazkowski, stand up. I didn't see it. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lippert, you mentioned that these task force simply need to be extended periodically. We do have task force expiration dates set in law because they're initially intended to be temporary for a limited time in nature when they're first designed. What is it about this particular task force that demands us to extend this for yet another period of time, another 5 years it looks like? What is the pressing need? It seems to me this task force has had a long time to navigate and operate, and What is it? What's the new type of information that they're seeking to do that they weren't able to do in the period given to them?
Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I would simply say that the organic portion of the agricultural industry is a vital part of the agricultural industry. There are many farmers that are looking to transition, both for ecological reasons and, very importantly, for economic ones. So I think it's very much in the state's interest to be paying attention to this industry and for the University of Minnesota and for the Agriculture Commissioner to be aware of how to make the most of this industry for our state and for our farmers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lippert, thank you for that answer. It didn't really answer the question. I'm hoping that when this bill gets to the floor, we have an understanding, or maybe you can bring and share with us what it is that the task force needs to uncover or work on that it hasn't been able to since 2003 or 4 when it was initially formed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do have someone from the department here. She might want to come forward and be able to describe. Certainly, organics have grown and changed and then become much more part of the agricultural landscape in Minnesota. So I think that extending this is certainly appropriate. But I think Ms. Place might be able to also provide some additional testimony regarding that. Thank you.
Okay, and if you could identify yourself for the record, and I think you've heard the question.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Whitney Place. I serve as Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. To answer your question, Representative Drazkowski, organic agriculture is one of the fastest growing sectors in agriculture, specifically in Minnesota. We have about 700 certified organic farms and 230 certified organic food businesses. And we would support extending this organic task force to continue to inform the department on emerging issues within the organic sector. We have things coming online like aquaponics and aeroponics that there's questions whether or not those should be considered organic. We have lots of new technologies coming along with laboratory grown meat and whether or not that should be considered organic. And so this task force really helps us to identify those emerging needs and inform our policies.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Place.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Pompey, I interrupted you when you were about to make a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I renew my motion that House File 1267 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Any further discussion? Seeing none then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Thank you. And the bill is on its way to Government Operations.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Division Report on House File 13.
Okay, the motion is before us. And the motion for the Division Report is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Olson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 13, the First Engrossment, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Okay, the motion is before us, and welcome back. And if you would care to explain the bill briefly and also why it's before Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to be back. I'm getting my exercise up and down the floors. Representative Kunesh-Podein here. House File 13 proposes a constitutional amendment to add language to the Minnesota Bill of Rights, specifically Article 1, Section 18, to provide that equality under the law shall not be abridged or denied on account of gender. I am here before you today because there is a nominal cost to adding this referendum question to the ballot. This question would be added to the 2020 election ballot, and there is a small cost for getting it into and onto the ballot, and then eventually the whole technological computation of the votes. I think the cost for this was approximately $2,000, and the Secretary of State feels that they can absorb that indirect costs identified in this fiscal note.
Thank you, and we do have a question. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kunesh Poudin. How many genders are there, and what definition of gender will the people of Minnesota, if they vote for this constitutional amendment, be referencing?
I don't believe that there.
Oh. Representative Kunesh Poudin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I don't believe there is a defined definition of the word gender. This bill is based on the identity, how folks are self-identifying when it comes to their gender.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Kunesh Poudin, how are we to allow Minnesotans to know what they're voting for? They're voting for something that doesn't have a definition. How is that going to play out with the people of Minnesota?
Representative Kunesh Poudin.
Well, this is an ERA amendment, and so the amendment would prohibit denial of equality under the law on basis of gender or sex. Either one of them are many people will notice or accept as interchangeable. And I guess the bottom line is the basis that equal means equal.
Representative Drazkowski, follow-up.
Madam Chair, I'm thoroughly confused by the author's testimony. But it appears that we have a constitutional amendment proposal before us that won't have any definition in law to tell the people of Minnesota what they're voting for or against. I don't know if that's a responsible thing for this legislature to do.
Representative Kunesh Poudin, any comment to that? I didn't hear a question there.
Representative Kunesh Poudin, do you think that's a responsible thing to do?
I do, because I think it's important that that Minnesota does not discriminate on basis of sex and gender as a component of any kind of sexual orientation. And I feel that if we want to fully represent the people of Minnesota, we need to represent all of the folks of Minnesota, no matter how they are identifying themselves. Madam Chair, sorry.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm thoroughly confused. I look forward to the debate on the floor over this, but it seems to be a plant that is not properly rooted. I don't know if we're being responsible bringing forward an amendment to the Constitution to allow the people of Minnesota to entertain when they don't know what it means when they vote for it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And question for nonpartisan staff. The appropriation for, it's in Section 2 of the bill, which finance division is that part of?
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, there is no appropriation in Section 2 of the bill.
I'm reading the wrong bill. That's why I'm so confused. Like, why doesn't the fiscal note match up? I'm like, what's going on here? What is the deal? Okay, well, that's a great job answering that question. Thank you, Representative.
And he's the GOP lead on this?
Yeah, yeah. Well, then 50 cents will get you a can of pop, Representative Dabney. So two questions, though. Number one, in the reviewing the testimony in committee, there was a statement that perhaps this could lead to additional litigation because right now in Minnesota we have the Doe versus Gomez decision, which is a pretty provocative standard by which abortion is deemed a state constitutional right where the taxpayers have to fund abortion services for those on public service programs. However, at the federal level, we have something called the Hyde Amendment where the federal courts have ruled that the taxpayers do not have to meet that standard. Given that fact, shouldn't there be something in the fiscal note pointing to the likely event that there would be litigation in this matter?
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm sorry I don't have that as part of my bill.
Okay. So,
Representative Garofalo.
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, what I just stated is true, that that testimony was presented, and that the reality is we have different standards under Minnesota law and federal law with regards to the taxpayer funding of abortions. In Minnesota, it is mandated per a 1995 Supreme Court decision. At the federal level, we have I believe it's the Harris case, which confirmed that there's not a requirement for that. And as I view the language of this amendment, it is very clear, as is happening in other states, this language is being used to produce a constitutional requirement that taxpayers fund abortions. And so, Madam Chair, and to the author of the bill, in light of the fact of the longstanding divisiveness of social issues like this, do you think it's a wise idea to put a divisive social issue on the ballot involving abortion?
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Minnesota's Constitution already has that language that supports a woman's right to make her own reproductive decisions. We don't know what's coming down the pike when it comes to those sort of litigations, and so at this point, I don't know how we would assess or budget for something like that, and that is not part of this bill. This is a ERA bill and not a bill that is anticipating that kind of litigation.
And Madam Chair, and to the author, in your opinion, as the author of the bill, do you believe that this language is meant to provide the guarantee of a woman's right to choose at the federal level to fund taxpayer funding of abortions?
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Madam Chair, Representative, no, that was not the intent at all.
And Madam Chair, to the author, because this language has been used as the basis of court cases in other state jurisdictions for that. So in light of that conflict, what advice would you give me on that?
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
The advice that I would give you is that our courts always have to consider the safety and the security of our constituents and the people of Minnesota, and I would hope that our courts could address those issues should they come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the author. I have a little bit of experience of putting divisive social issues on the ballot and seeing what happens when you put those in a form of a constitutional amendment. I was blessed, though. I was given a chance to get it right the second time, and I think I got it right the second time. And I would just advise the DFL majority that if you're going to be bringing forward a constitutional amendment like this, which is probably the most provocative, the most divisive social issue that has been engaged in American society going back to before I was born, you may want to think twice about that. Probably not a good idea to take abortion rights and put that in the form of a constitutional amendment and the taxpayer funding of abortions and putting that on the ballot in an initiative. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kunesh-Podein, I'm searching through the one-page bill here for the word abortion, and I'm not finding it. It seems to me that you've got a pretty solid basic idea here, and I fail to understand how equality is a divisive issue. It does seem to me, Madam Chair of Kunesh-Podein, that no matter what we do in law, we're going to be applying American due process in each and every circumstance, and that ultimately will be the decider of how we use our appropriations and the scope and of our policy frameworks. This seems like a pretty simple proposition that regardless of what a Minnesotan's understanding is of a person's gender, that person deserves to be treated equally under the law. I think it's a pretty clear question for the people. And, of course, the context, because we keep talking around it, the context is that we have a society where it was pretty clear that our laws really only apply to men, and initially only to men that had wealth. And initially only men who had wealth who were white. We've evolved as a people beyond that, thankfully, but we still haven't stated quite flatly you know, that that our laws apply to all people the same way that we stated it flatly way back 200 years ago. And so I just think it's a very simple proposition, and I look forward to engaging the public in it. Thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just underscoring the same point as Representative Mariani, it a provocative, controversial statement doesn't make something true. And to hear that equality under the law is now a divisive social issue must be shocking to members, citizens of the state of Minnesota, if they're listening this morning.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo brought up the issue of lawsuits, and the fact that his speculation is that this particular constitutional amendment would draw lawsuits. Representative Garofalo, when we were in the reverse and we were in the minority and you were in the majority, and I sat on this committee, I would often bring up the question of, aren't you going to have a lawsuit as a result of this particular legislation? It wasn't once or twice, but many times I brought it up. And the ruling was always, or the statement was always, well, that's too speculative. So the precedent on this committee is that we do not consider maybe lawsuits in the future.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, and well, Representative Wagenius, that was different. but I do, there seems to be some dispute from the other side of the aisle that this is, in fact, an amendment that is just about equality under the law based on gender. I think members need to be a little bit more well-researched on this subject and understand. For example, in the state of Pennsylvania, quote, Pennsylvania's ban on Medicaid coverage of abortion is a decades-long injustice that deprives low-income women of reproductive health care in violation of the state's constitution's Equal Rights Amendment. The amendment that is being brought forward to you is being done on a basis of allowing a more constitutional, at a federal level, a constitutional right to an abortion. That is what this is. Now, you can dispute that pregnancy discrimination is not a basis for sex discrimination. It would be an interesting argument. But make no mistake about it. You're not bringing forward an equal rights amendment. You're bringing forward an equal litigation amendment that is going to be incredibly divisive, and should it be on the ballot, be an incredibly divisive social issue that is not going to bring Minnesotans together. It's going to separate us on deeply held, decade-long experiences on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Any more discussion? There's no one. Yep, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to comment, you know, what makes this really different here is that our Constitution already protects women, the equality of women who get their insurance through Medicaid, to put them on par with other women and protect their constitutional right to have an abortion should they so choose. So this amendment, this ERA, is not going to change that. It's already part of our law. So whether somebody in some other state wants to say that this gives them that right really does not change Minnesota, because we already have that law. This is, does not say, as has been pointed out, it says nothing about abortion. This is about equality under the law, regardless of your gender. So thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. I appreciate that you're taking the arrows on this for all of Minnesota's citizens who have been or will be discriminated against because of their gender, whatever that gender may be. Thank you.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that since we have this protection already in the Constitution, this is not going to be adding additional rights for folks to sue. And wanted to ask the question that people can sue on just about anything, but Representative Garofalo, you mentioned that there have been a number of cases brought. Has there been litigation in a state like Minnesota that has constitutional protection already that has found a separate right under the Equal Rights Amendment?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Long, first of all, you're a lawyer, and as came up in committee last week, I only went to law school for half a semester, so I don't like getting into these fancy law debates. I'm just a simple network engineer from Farmington. That's all I am. Now, what I would tell you, Representative Long, is that when you read the plain language of the constitutional amendment that's being proposed to Minnesota's constitution, this would clearly go a step beyond the Doe versus Gomez decision, which many people in our state have a serious problem with. The Doe versus Gomez decision is a problematic decision, to say the least. It conflicts with federal law. It is an attempt to take a provision that is not in there, the constitutional right to abortion. It's not in the Constitution right now. We're supposed to believe that it exists, though, even though it's not in the language. And then we're using that as a basis of reference for the language of this amendment to say, well, because it doesn't say abortion, it doesn't mean abortion. Well, that's the reading of the Constitution right now in Minnesota. It doesn't say abortion anywhere. And so, again, we are coming forward. Let's have the debate. If you guys want to make it a constitutional right to have an abortion in Minnesota, say that's what it is, because that's what this amendment does.
Representative Long, no, please. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I've had a little more time to reflect on this, and I still can't really wrap my head around something that is going to be put before the voters that doesn't have any definition as to what it is. I can only foresee, should this be adopted by the people of the state of Minnesota, by many of them likely unknowingly about what it will mean, that people could invent their gender and circumstantially in order to bring forward accusations or complaints in the process of litigation. So just really, I think a misguided bill bringing forward, but thank you for the discussion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Kunesh-Podein, did you have a comment to that?
No, ma'am. No, Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, as this bill progresses, we will have the debate. But I think we should have a debate about what's in the bill and limit ourselves to what's in the bill and not wandering off into unrelated issues. The ERA and even the Doe v. Gomez decision are not in conflict with federal law. Under our Constitution, 10th Amendment, the state is the laboratory of democracy, under the legendary words of Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. And we are allowed the autonomy, or we hold the autonomy, of governing our state funding. The Hyde Amendment, which is extremely divisive, limiting to women's access to the full gamut of reproductive health needs being taken care of, is extremely divisive and applies only to federal funds. The Doe v. Gomez decision applies only to Minnesota funds. A logical and constitutional differentiation. So if we're going to have a debate, let's have the debate about what's actually in the bill as opposed to inventing concerns that are not present in the bill. And as it's been referenced, I would remind all members that when Minnesota voters in 2012 were offered the opportunity to vote for enshrining discrimination into the Constitution of the state, they rejected it. I trust that my fellow voters want their mothers and their daughters and their sisters and their cousins and their aunts and their neighbors and their coworkers and their colleagues treated fairly and without discrimination by the laws of this state. I have confidence that if placed on the ballot, Minnesotans will look in the eyes of their friends and neighbors and family, see their value, and decide to vote in the affirmative, as they did in 2012 when they were offered the opportunity to discriminate in our Constitution or not. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. Seeing no more questions, I renew my motion that House File 13, the first engrossment, be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. So the motion before us, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 13, the first engrossment, is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And the last order of business is a presentation by MMB on Governor Walz's budget recommendations.
Welcome, Commissioner, and I think it'll take you, oh, you are set up already.
We're ready to go.
Somebody was quick. Well, welcome, and as Vice Chair Olson indicated, you're here today to give us an overview of the governor's budget. And I should remind committee members, we posted some additional time today because we had a rather ambitious agenda with a number of bills. We also wanted to have an overview of the governor's budget as well. So I think we're here until, what is it, 12:45 if need be, is what we announced and reserved the room for. So, Commissioner Franz, if you would like to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. My name is Myron Franz, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. I have with me Britta Raton, the state's budget director, and thank you for the opportunity to present the governor's budget. What I'd like to do is go through this slide at a fairly high level to give you an idea of where the governor's priorities are and the investments that we want to make, and also the way that we maintain a balanced budget with adding revenue. So we'll do this, and I think if we can get through it all, then we'll have an opportunity for some good questions. We have some schedules at the end I think will also be helpful. As you know, Governor Walz's budget proposal last Tuesday was based upon our November forecast, which will be updated this Thursday. The starting point, though, for the governor's budget is the base budget for 20 and 21. The base for 20 and 21 is established based upon current law appropriations and formulas that were contained in the 18-19 budget that was carried forward. So this means that the 2021 base budget is determined by the budget that was passed in the legislature in 2017 or the 18-19 budget. The base for 2021 before any new budget recommendations is $47.5 billion. The base budget increases relative to the prior biennium by 2.1% annually. This is because of existing legal obligations, which are a result of statutory formulas like medical assistance and special education, as well as legislatively appropriated increases. So the legislature passed a budget in 2018 that led to a base budget for 2021 that's about $2 billion higher than the fiscal 18-19 budget. And that is the starting point for Governor Walz's proposed budget. The governor's proposed budget adds $2 billion in general fund spending in 20 and 21. This proposed budget increase is a 2.1% annual increase over the existing base. Now, why don't you go ahead to the next slide. I just wanted to set the stage before we go any further. As required by law, we have a balanced budget that ends on June 30. We have forecasted a $1.5 billion balance for the next biennium, 20 and 21. We have a little over $2.4 billion in a rainy day fund, which is the collection of both the budget reserve account and the cash flow account. We have a AAA credit rating and a modest state debt when compared to other states. The rating agencies restored Minnesota's AAA bond rating because we restored our budget reserves, we improved our financial performance, and we solved structural problems with smart fiscal policies, such as having an automatic budget reserve law. So a fiscally sound budget is our starting point for the governor's budget. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the investment areas that the governor is concerned with. First of all, I want to go into and talk about the $2 billion investments that the governor wants to make, which include new investments. We also want to talk about the new revenue proposals and also capital investments in our bonding bill, which will be released tomorrow. First, to achieve One Minnesota, our budget proposes at $2 billion in general fund investments. So we're able to effect the greatest change for the most people by making strategic investments to the general fund while also protecting the health care access fund and providing dedicated funding for transportation and transit projects. The new general fund spending, $1.3 billion, is for the investments in the key areas of education, health care, and community prosperity. The remaining $700 million is for other investments, such as funding for vulnerable adults, safety in our prisons, and long-term care for seniors and persons with disabilities. This budget raises $1.9 billion by 2223 in dedicated revenue for fixing roads and bridges and for safe traveling and building a transit system that gets people where they need to go. Lastly, this budget protects $244 million in funding for health care within the Health Care Access Fund. Let me go to the first area of the governor's priorities, in education. The governor's budget includes a historic $733 million increase in E-12 education. The majority is due to a 3% increase to the general education formula in 2020 and another 2% increase in 20 and 21. It also makes significant investment in special education and making sure students get the services they need without school districts needing to spend more from their overall budgets. I've listed some other items here for education, but the key point I want to make here is the governor's commitment to a historic level of funding for E-12 education. The next area I want to talk about is in higher education. The governor proposes to help make colleges and universities more affordable and more accessible by providing an additional $68 million in state financial aid and programming, for nearly all of which goes directly to students. Our budget also provides $51 million for Minnesota State and proposes $150 million for capital investments. More than 70 projects are planned for over 40 Minnesota State campuses to ensure that buildings are accessible, safe, secure, and energy efficient. This budget invests $39 million in the University of Minnesota and proposes an additional $150 million in bonding to renovate and complete facilities while preserving and upgrading structures in Crookston, Duluth, Morse, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester campuses. The $150 million for the University of Minnesota includes $4.3 million to renovate the A.B. Anderson Hall on the Duluth campus to modernize 35,000 square feet of teaching space and update mechanical and life safety systems, and $28 million to complete the Institute of Child Development facility for the University of Minnesota's College of Education and Human Development, which houses the top-ranked program in child and adolescent psychology in the country. Now let's go to health care. The governor's proposal retains the 25-year-old provider tax so we can continue to support Health Care Access Fund, preventing a $1 billion deficit if the tax were to expire this year. The Health Care Access Fund is vital to fund health care for individuals who are low-income, elderly, and are living with disabilities. We also use the Health Care Access Fund for new programs that help lower the cost of insurance on the individual markets for small businesses, farmers, and the self-employed. Our budget includes $244 million for health care spending from this fund in 20 and 21. In 20 and 21, the $245 million from the Health Care Access Fund and the remaining reinsurance appropriations will provide a comprehensive and targeted approach for stabilizing the individual market. It's in three steps. First, it spends $190 million in 2020 to provide a 20% discount to those purchasing on MedSure who don't receive federal tax credits. This continues the savings Minnesotans have seen through the reinsurance program without the loss of federal funding to Minnesota Care. Second, beginning in calendar year 2021, we propose spending $50 million to create a tax credit for individuals purchasing on MedSure whose health insurance premiums are more than 9.9% of their income. This proposal picks up where federal programs drop off to provide targeted assistance to those households whose premiums put undue strain on their family budgets. This package also makes crucial reforms to the way we pay for dental care and prescription drugs for our state public programs. These changes will improve access and rein in spending growth. In addition, this budget lays out the groundwork for a statewide public option in Minnesota similar to the Minnesota Care buy-in. This option is designed to pick up where the private market fails Minnesotans. Beginning in calendar year 2023, this proposal would result in the statewide offering of a platinum-level plan with robust networks. Platinum-level plans have low deductibles and copays, but are no longer offered by any private carriers in Minnesota. In calendar 2024, the state would offer even more choices if the private market fails to provide sufficient options to consumers. Now let's talk about individuals and communities across Minnesota. Obviously, we know they succeed when they have the resources and flexibility to make choices that best reflect their unique needs in housing and transportation, in child care, and in economic development. The budget invests in all Minnesota communities by increasing funding in the general fund by $432 million, providing $150 million in capital investment for housing, providing $330 million in capital investment for transportation and transit, and dedicating $1.9 billion to much-needed transportation and transit projects. With $61 million, we restore local aid to cities and counties to levels not seen since 2000, and include a local government sales tax exemption for construction materials worth about $55 million. This allows local governments to save money, invest in the needs of their community, and provide property tax relief. This budget also provides $70 million to help complete a One Minnesota broadband network and $44 million to help increase access to quality child care statewide. In the capital investment area, with our strong fiscal management and capacity for debt, we better serve Minnesotans' lives through smart capital investments. I've already highlighted our bonding and recommendations in key areas, $300 million in higher education, $150 million in housing, and in transportation, $330 million. The governor's bonding proposal also requests $39 million to make correctional facilities more safe. We will release our full $1.27 billion capital investment proposal tomorrow. As you know, in even-numbered bonding years, our process involves inviting submissions for local projects. That process will begin this spring for the 2020 capital budget cycle. Given this biennial budget year, we plan to work with all of you and encourage local governments to submit their projects for consideration, review, and approval through the legislative process. To fund our One Minnesota investments, this budget includes $1.267 billion in new revenue to the general fund, while retaining the provider tax and creating new dedicated funding for transportation and transit projects. The largest portion of increase to general fund revenue comes from conforming our business taxes to the new federal tax law. Conformity broadens the tax base for business income by adding new foreign income provisions and repealing or limiting the use of business deductions. Business benefited disproportionately from the federal tax giveaway, and the revenue raised through conformity will help support families, workers, and the elderly left behind by the federal tax policy. This budget also improves the stability of our revenue sources over time. For example, by restoring an inflationary factor to our state general property tax levy and to cigarette and tobacco taxes. We make taxes fair by providing $440 million in tax relief for those who need it the most, including $20 million for an expansion of the working family credit for families with three or more children, an additional $81.4 million for working family credits to help offset the increase in the transportation package, $23 million to reduce Social Security taxes, and $222 million in tax savings for equipment purchases by Minnesota farmers and small businesses under Section 179. We also restore $460 million to the general fund that was previously redirected for transportation projects. Funding transportation from the general fund places a large burden on funding intended for education, public safety, and health care. For too many years, we have kicked the can down the road when it comes to providing dedicated funding for transportation. At the same time, states from across the country are increasing investments in roads, bridges, and transit through increases in the gas tax to help improve their economies and keep people safe. When fully phased in, our transportation and transit package will provide $1.9 billion in funding for roads, bridges, and to build out a transit system across the state. To fund the road and bridge repair, our budget initiates a 20-cent gas tax increase, which is phased in over 2 years, and then indexes the gas to inflation. It increases the vehicle registration tax and increases the motor vehicle sales tax to match the sales tax rate paid on all other purchases at 6.875%. To fund the transit system in the metro, our budget increases the 7-county metro sales tax by 1/8 of a cent, which will support new metro transit projects and fund current operations. I'll let Budget Director Raton walk you through the chart you've all been waiting for, and which I know is the highlight of this morning's committee.
Mr. Chair, I'm Britta Raton, State Budget Director, and I will walk through the math of the governor's budget proposal. So on this slide, we're starting with the November forecast budget balance at the bottom of the left column at $1.5 billion. So that's the budgetary balance projected for fiscal years 20 and 21. There are no changes to the left column numbers, which come directly from the November forecast. If you look at the middle column, you can see the governor's proposed budget. The beginning balance at the top is changing because the governor has proposed spending and revenue in this biennium, specifically for improvements into the MNLAR system, cost reimbursement for deputy registrars, and $10 million to the disaster assistance contingency account. These spending items are partially offset by revenue increases generated by the tax conformity proposal. By proposing these changes for this fiscal year ending June 30th, 2019, we changed the beginning balance for fiscal years 20 and 21. The revenue line then reflects an increase in revenues of the $1.267 billion that Commissioner Franz previously mentioned. And then combining current law revenue with the proposed changes, you can see $49.6 billion in total revenue in the next biennium in fiscal years 20 and 21. And I will go into the detail of those revenue changes on the next slide. The expenditure line reflects an increase in general fund expenditures of $2.018 billion in the middle column. The November base spending with proposed investments equals total proposed expenditures of $49.5 billion for the next biennium. If we go to the rows below spending, you can see the proposed budget includes $2.425 billion in the state's budget reserve in the cash account. Collectively, these funds are referred to as the Rainy Day Fund, and there is no change in those funds compared to the November forecast. The proposed budget also continues to include the $98 million in the stadium reserve account, and again, that's unchanged from the November forecast. So before we move to the bottom line, I want to talk a little bit more about the $1.267 billion in revenue that's increasing in the general fund. So this slide highlights and breaks apart those changes within that revenue amount. $764 million of the revenue increase is resulting from the governor's federal conformity and revenue stability proposals. $43 million is new non-tax revenue. This means it's generated by fees or transfers coming in from other funds into the general fund. And Commissioner Franz previously mentioned the transportation proposal adds $460 million in sales tax revenue back into the general fund. This money was previously redirected from the general fund to the transportation funds. So lastly, I want to focus your attention on the bottom line. This budget is balanced for fiscal years 20 and 21 and fiscal years 22 and 23. It leaves $789 million on the bottom line for 2021, which will then roll over into fiscal years 22 and 23. And after continuing to make investments into the planning years, this budget is projected to leave $520 million on the bottom line for fiscal years 22 and 23. So turning to the next slide, this slide provides a breakdown of the investment in the governor's budget by bill area. In the far right column, you can see the total change by bill area, and in the bottom right corner, those changes total the overall expenditure change of $2.018 billion in fiscal years 20 and 21. We've also provided the committee a detailed report that gives the fiscal detail for each proposed change item by agency and rolls up to those bill totals that reconcile with this slide. So if you have further questions about those items, we will defer to the commissioner of the relevant agency to dive into more depth on those specific change items.
Let me just mention one more item, and then we'll open up for questions. One of the things that Governor Walz has really wanted us to focus on is to make sure that we invest in what works. In crafting this budget, our goal was to really improve the lives of as many Minnesotans and communities as possible, and we want to do that by investing in data-driven results ideas that some of you are familiar with, our Results First program and how we're trying to achieve a better data-driven policy. We also want to reform programs that save money and reach more people efficiently and effectively. And we want to invest in funding models that empower local communities to do what is best for them instead of a top-down approach. You can see on the right side of the slide that Minnesota has been named a top five state in using data and evidence to achieve better results for residents by the Pew and Results for America entity. Clearly, this is an area where we can improve, and we want to be do more of this in the future. A good example of this, where you use data-driven evidence, is really with the Homework Starts with Home project. That's a program that provides assistance to families of school-aged kids without stable housing, because we know, and it's been proven, that stable housing leads to improved educational outcomes. Another area is higher education financial aid. It's been proven that need-based aid leads to improved graduation and completion rates. And finally, comprehensive suicide prevention. We know that a suicide lifeline coupled with community-based suicide prevention grants and evidence-based training and resources have been shown to reduce suicide risk levels and decrease medically treated suicide attempts. We also want to look at ways to do things differently in order to provide better service to the people of Minnesota and provide savings in our budget. We want to reform the way we pay nursing home care by providing incentives for higher quality care by the nursing homes. We want to reform the way we pay for behavioral health services in order to provide more integrated care for people needing mental health and substance abuse treatment. We also want to create uniform standards for mental health, which will improve services for patients and will eliminate requirements that do not add value or enhance the quality of treatment. And finally, in this budget, we want to focus on empowering communities across Minnesota. One example is the Tribal Child Welfare Initiative, where we are expanding the number of tribes who can provide their own child protection services. Another example is funding for full-service community schools. This is a program that helps schools serve primarily low-income or rural community partners with community agencies to provide family support services such as on-site health and dental clinics, mental health services, family resource centers, and college access information. These programs have been shown to increase academic achievement and improve attendance for school districts with the highest needs in our state. And we're also empowering communities across Minnesota by increasing funding for local government aid. On the last slide, I just want to go back to where we started, and that is our One Minnesota budget makes key investments in education, healthcare, and community prosperity while raising sufficient revenue to balance our budget. It makes our state taxes fair to families and provides smart capital resources to support asset preservation and improvement. We do a lot in our budget, but we stay true to our governing principles of sound fiscal management. Our budget is balanced in the next two biennia and leaves a historic amount of money on the bottom line as a cautious step, $789 million for 20 and 21. So we're back where we started. We began with a fiscally responsible budget, and we end with one. We will continue to have a balanced budget with a $2.4 billion rainy day fund, a AAA bond credit rating, and a well-managed state debt to enhance and be able to take care of our bonding package, which we will release tomorrow. And with that, we're happy to take questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you for letting us make the presentation.
Okay, the first one on the list is Representative Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good to see you, Commissioner. First of all, I have a Representative Hornstein, and I don't know the answer to this question. One penny in the gas tax over a calendar year, how much does that raise? Off the top of your head or not?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo, it's the $30 million.
Oh, $30 million. Okay, thank you. And so, Mr. Chairman, to the testifier, to the commissioner, you mentioned you're having a capital investment press conference tomorrow. I can save some time for you.
There's not going to be a bonding bill this year. You can just, you don't need to have a press conference. This is not a bonding year. Next year is a bonding year. So you can free up some time, put it into focusing on the budget, but there ain't going to be a bonding bill this year. Second, Commissioner, I was surprised to hear you say that you thought that the funding of transportation was done at the expense of healthcare, education, and the environment. For how long have you believed that funding trains and buses is dangerous to funding healthcare, education, and the environment?
Mr. Chair, well, thank you for your questions, Representative Garofalo. First of all, on the bonding bill, I think those kind of announcements really make me question why we're here in this committee. My understanding is we've bonded every year for the last 30 years but two. And so the question to me isn't about whether we should have a bonding bill or not have a bonding bill. The question is, do we have asset preservation needs? Do we have opportunities to expand and enhance what we can do for Minnesotans? We have we're below our debt capacity. We've maintained a moderate debt. And so one of the things that happens is, you know, every bonding, last year in the bonding bill, we took a lot of statewide asset preservation dollars off the table for the University of Minnesota, for Minnesota State, and for the state, and we put in a lot of local projects, which is good. The local projects needed to be done. But my point is that this is a great opportunity for the state to take a step toward rebuilding its infrastructure. One of the things that credit rating agencies do these days is they analyze the investment by states in their infrastructure. So to the extent a state is not investing in its infrastructure over time, that will be deemed a credit risk at some point. So I think one of the things that from our point of view, the bonding bill provides that opportunity to show that we can, on a routine basis, take care of bonding projects that need to be done. And I would certainly be happy to sit down and work with you and find out which one of these projects you wouldn't want to see go forward. But I think you would agree they need to be done. I certainly understand you have a different position on whether we should have one. But in terms of saying that I prioritize transportation over health and safety of people, I'm not saying we shouldn't fund transportation and transit. I'm simply suggesting the best way to do it is through a dedicated revenue source. One of the really great aspects of the gas tax in Minnesota is the constitutional dedication of the funds to transportation through a really clear formula that gets to communities, that gets to the states. And so if the public wants a guarantee that that a tax that they pass is going to go to roads and bridges, it would be the gas tax. So I think this actually highlights the need to get that done, and it relieves the pressure on the general fund to take care of other health concerns, education, public safety. So I believe strongly. I actually was one of those unfortunate people last winter that hit one of those potholes that did not have a bottom in it. I think my tire is somewhere down there. But anyway, it was destroyed. It's expensive. You know, we can't solve all potholes. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that I think the time for investment is every year to show that we're committed to making our infrastructure work and safe for people.
Mr. Chairman?
I was just going to comment on the potholes. Representative Hornstein had a proposal a few years ago, and I think Representative Garofalo maybe was on the conference committee where we had a special fund for potholes, and that was a massive bill, and the most popular item, I think, in the entire bill was the fixing of potholes. So I identified with what you were saying when you lost your tire. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought you were going to say that the Hornstein plan to fix potholes is to make us all ride bikes, I thought. But the Commissioner, so with regards to the gas tax, looks like we're taking $460 million of general fund money that's going to roads and bridges. We're moving into other things, and then we're backfilling it with the gas tax. Is a compromise position on this maybe that we could have a lower gas tax but preserve the general fund spending on roads and bridges? Is that a reasonable plan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, well, when you take the $460 million and redirect it, it's not going to other things. It's going to roads and bridges. So that money, as you indicate, that money is being spent on roads and bridges. We would simply put it over and be supported by the gas tax. You know, the problem with not doing that, not taking out that dedication from the general fund, is as we go forward, it's just my personal opinion that the general fund is going to become a much more valuable source, a resource in the future. You know, I don't know what's going to happen on Thursday, and my colleague here would kick me if I sort of forecasted the forecast. But we've seen some revenues kind of below what our projections are, so we have some concerns. And so looking forward, you know, we also, I think, reported to this committee about a month ago that IHS, our consultants, lowered the projection on growth in the future by 0.1 per year for several years. So we've got a couple negative indicators out there of growth. We're seeing continued growth, don't get me wrong, we're just seeing growth slowing a little bit. So in my view, that's when you really want to protect the general fund more than ever and let the transportation funding be completely handled by the dedicated gas tax.
Mr. Chairman, I have two more questions. Do we have enough time for that, or is there a curfew?
We've got until 12:45. Okay. I don't know that we'll run that long, we've got the room reserved. Representative Raffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to the commissioner, you used the word historic in describing your budgets. We have a rapidly growing economy. Economy's doing good. Unemployment's going down. Why is the Walz administration proposing property tax increases in this bill?
Mr. Chair, actually what the governor is proposing is through the increase in state aid to local cities and counties and also eliminating the sales tax exemption giving an exemption on sales taxes for construction materials. We're providing local cities and counties with additional revenue, which we would hope would reduce property taxes.
And Mr. Chairman, and to the commissioner, what about the school property tax increase in your proposal?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, the school safety levy is something that we think that schools, you know, really need. They want to have a choice, a decision in their process of what they think their schools should be. So that's a really very modest increase, and I don't think it would jeopardize property taxes that much.
Mr. Chairman, I thought one of the early session wins we were going to have this year, we were going to use the existing funds in reinsurance to preserve the successes of that program that lowered premiums for Minnesotans. And now looks like that's not in the governor's budget. He's going forward with the premium subsidy plan. Does this mean the reinsurance plan is dead?
Representative Franz.
Mr. Did you say representative?
I may have.
just got promoted. Thank you.
You've been demoted into the pay cut.
Well, I think part of the what was the question?
No, Mr. Chair, I tell you what. Why don't we? Just,
we threw him off with the title, I guess.
Why don't we? Why don't we just let's ignore that one. Let's not bring that up because maybe there's some hope that thing's still alive, and I don't want to pin anyone down on that issue. But my final question for the commissioner is: in fiscal year 22-23, in that biennium, the budget that's being brought forward has more expenditures than revenues in that two-year window. This strikes me as an odd way to say that it's to value structural balance. Do you want to comment on that?
Commissioner Franz. Mr. Chair, Representative, well, thank you for the question. I mean, clearly, when we talk about structural balance, we're talking about revenues exceeding expenditures. And we have that in 20 and 21, as you mentioned, in 22-23. There is a flip that occurs, and that is of concern. The key, then, if you have a situation with revenues not growing as fast as expenditures in the planning years, the key is to make sure you have enough resources, one-time resources available in the budget year that can go into that next year and provide the budgetary balance. But that actually goes to my concern about the general fund, and so we'll know more on Thursday, but I just want to make sure that we protect the general fund if that is a trend because of the difference in growth that we're projecting. That's of concern to me. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman. As always, Commissioner, it's good to see you. And I will give this compliment to Governor Walz. He made a wise decision in keeping you around.
Thank you.
The state of Minnesota has served well by having you around here for another 4 years or however long you can tolerate us.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is just a pet peeve I have whenever I see transportation and transit as though transit is not transportation. I just have to call it out because we have to break that bad habit. Transportation is roads, bridges, transit, ports, aviation. But when you isolate it out, it makes it sound like transit is not transportation. Just a pet peeve. To the issue of debt that we already have taken on the last 4 years to pay for transportation. In the Transportation Committee, we didn't spend much time on those two pages because we ran out of time, but if you looked at it, it was very alarming that the debt we've taken on to pay for transportation projects the last 4 years, that accumulates over time, and that you end up having to pay more debt service than you have revenue coming in. In the last few days, I thought I saw the Transportation Commissioner say something about 16 cents of that is for debt service. If you could check that out at some point, because we need to have clarification of that in the Transportation Committee too, what is going to be the impact?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Hall, Corner Chair Hornstein, and we'll look at the details on that. Thank you.
And then because of what Representative Garofalo said, and I do take that very seriously, because passing a bonding bill is hard to do, and I've had a little experience with that. On that $150 million bonding, $30 million of that is general obligation bonding. That must go in a bonding bill. $120 of it is housing infrastructure bonds. And Ms. Dyson, Deb Dyson, reminded us that that does not require a supermajority. And so I would at least raise the possibility that housing infrastructure bonds, we should begin to shift that thinking into being in a housing budget bill rather than a bonding bill. Just an observation.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Houseman, you done? Okay, then Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Franz, congratulations.
Thank you.
And look forward to working with you as always. So what is the overall amount of the additional money that the governor is proposing to take from the pockets of hardworking Minnesotans in this proposal? In other words, the 2018-19 spending projected total contrasted with the governor's 2018-2019 tax revenue projection, which is almost over, contrasted with the total tax income that the governor has in his proposal. What amount is that? How much additional money is he going to take from the hardworking people in our state?
Mr. Chair, you mean the money he's going to give to Minnesotans for better education, better health care, better transportation, and more sustainable communities? You mean that money?
No.
Is that the money you're talking about?
No, Commissioner Franz. It's the people's money, and so that's taken from them, and we want to find out how much he plans to take from them.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll let Britt Raton give you those numbers.
I like the word investment. Thank you for sharing that. Ms. Raton. Assistant Commissioner Raton.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the all fund revenue growth over the base level of revenue is 1.8% annually. So if you annualize that change, is 1.8 over base.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Raton, but that's not the question. The question is the 2018-2019 projected amount we're going to take from Minnesotans in this fiscal year, contrasted with what the governor is proposing in 20 and 21 to take from the hardworking people of our state. What is the difference?
Ms. Raton.
Mr. Chair, so that's comparing to the previous biennium instead of comparing to base, just to make sure that I'm giving you an appropriate comparison. And I believe that on an annualized basis is 3.9%.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Raton, how much additional money is that the governor plans to take from hardworking people throughout our state?
What is that investment, Ms. Raton?
Comparing the all funds revenues in 20 and 21 in the governor's proposed budget to the all funds revenues in 18 and 19, the increase is $6.5 billion. But a portion of that increase is under the existing base because of the growth in our revenue sources.
Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Raton. How much additional? So I see in the tax conformity proposal, the governor is going to extract some additional tax money from hardworking people there. Who are going to, as we look at last year's proposal, the proposal was
was really one that was going to come out in no net loss for taxpayers. This is not one. It's another $700 and some million extracted from taxpayers, disguised in the tax conformity proposal. How much additional money is he going to extract from that process in his proposal?
Mr. Chair, how much additional money beyond the 700?
Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner. Thank you. Which groups are going to be paying, forced, punished in their payment of those additional dollars?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think as I look through the tax proposal here, about most of the dollars will come through the tax conformity for businesses. So by conforming the federal tax, Minnesota tax bill or tax law with the federal 2017 federal tax bill, that will bring in about, and I'm losing my place here, Ms. Freitan, do you have the, that will raise about $855 million from businesses for that provision alone. And then in stabilizing the general general state tax levy inflator, that's about $53 million for the biennium. And restoring the tax, the inflator for tobacco tax and premium cigars, another $12 million. Those are some of the areas where the, these are offset by reductions, but those are some of the places where we will give people the opportunity to support their state fully.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Fiskowski.
And thank you, Commissioner, Ms. Rattan. Businesses are going to take it on the chin in the tax conformity proposal for the governor, and that's what I thought it was. Is the governor addressing anywhere in his budget the waste, fraud, and abuse problems that we have throughout many areas of the state government, especially and beginning with the Medicaid area, where we have long histories of legislative audits that have come forward and very clearly shown, at least in the 2015 example, there were over a five-month period from January through May of that year, anywhere from, according to the legislative auditor, $115 million to $271 million that were paid to people who didn't qualify for it or may have been dead and other or may not have been citizens or other things that were qualifiers or were supposed to be qualifiers. Is the governor even trying to address that, the $100 million in CCAP fraud that is being alleged and followed up on now with the legislative audit, the Minlars stuff, the Medicaid money that the governor decided not to even go after? It was like $31 million or something there. It goes on and on. But is he addressing any of this in his budget proposal?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Commissioner Kranz, I almost demoted you again.
I think the key, Representative, is the governor is focused on these issues and has the same concern that any of us do when funds aren't spent appropriately. I mean, one of the things that, let me just kind of back up one step, at MMB, we're responsible for providing audit controls throughout the enterprise, and we've been working really hard to increase the overall audit function to look specifically for waste, fraud, and abuse. And the goal is to reduce that wherever we can find it. And I'm not sure I understand, I agree with the levels that you are implying, but certainly in the areas of healthcare and in the programs of DHS, I know that Commissioner Lori did present and is in the governor's budget to add some more FTEs specifically for the audit and examination function. I don't have those numbers in front of me about how many, and we would anticipate that those additional FTEs would work to find any waste, fraud, or abuse. So that's one area where I know that he is. You know, the other areas that I talked a little bit about at the end of my presentation was the desire so that we continually start using more proven programs that are effective. And one of the things when you talk about Minlars is I think he knows that he's got to fix that problem, and we've got to get that turned around so the people of Minnesota get what they're paying for. And I think he's realized that he wants to work with the legislature and the private sector to come up with a model that better understands these large, complex, data-driven programs. One of the things that happened, and you probably remember this back in, I think it was 2008 in the Governor Pawlenty's term, we started with a new system to integrate the tax system at the Department of Revenue. And at the time, there was a market option that was available. Fast companies had developed a fairly good, sophisticated, integrated tax system. Well, we hired them in Minnesota. It took them like 5 years. I was there when they finally finished integrating the tax system. It took a number of years, a lot of testing, and it was a great result because we were able to find a product that was out there, adapt it to Minnesota, implement it, and it's been working very, very well because we've been maintaining it. We've got to be better. We all admit that. Are there products out there in the market that we can use in Minnesota? You know, the Minlars thing is one of those examples where, you know, early on in the history of Minlars, there really wasn't one of these products out there in the market you could just sort of buy and plop down in Minnesota, partly because Minnesota's laws are complex, like every state's laws, different and complex. So I'm not trying to dodge the question. I'm just saying I think the governor wants, with his blue ribbon panel, to help get the legislature and the private sector and all of us working together to figure out what's the best way forward to strategize, to make sure that when the people of Minnesota put money for a project, we know the best way to do it. We use the best practices. We monitor that appropriately. And when things go wrong, we get back and we explain why they're going wrong. And like in the Department of Revenue, that's where things went right. So the governor does have concern about these issues. You know, one of my jobs as being a holdover from the prior administration is to try to explain the number of issues that are out there, like Minlars is one of those first, to explain that this is a problem that we need to solve, and we've taken a long time to do that, and everybody involved, I know, has apologized for that, and it's not enough to just apologize, but we need to fix it. So he's really been pressing all the commissioners to come up with ways to reduce, become more effective, and make sure you're using best practices and programs that are proven to have results. When you start focusing on that and doing that, I think, better, you're going to start seeing fewer and fewer cases of waste, fraud, and abuse.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
By the way, Representative Duskowski, I've given you a lot of time, but we do have four people on the list that have questions as well, just as a reminder.
My last follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Commissioner, I appreciate that, and you mentioned that he has concern about the waste, fraud, and abuse that's rampant within Minnesota state government, been documented by our legislative auditor and others numerous times for many years now. And as a matter of fact, the Medicaid money, the legislative auditor's efforts in that area go back 10 or more years, probably 12 years now, that he has been going down that trail and trying to find out what's going on with these dollars, and most recently has actually been able to begin to quantify that. We've had two biennia of legislative proposals. I was the author of the bill to actually book those savings through the department, and Governor Dayton wasn't willing to do it in the budget. And my question is, and obviously we don't see anything in the budget that's going to go after these dollars and book the savings from this waste, fraud, and abuse that happens in a variety of areas. In the CCAP area, there's another $40 or $44 million being dumped into that well that is a black hole right now, because we have money being fraudulently spent, allegedly taken in suitcases to countries where there's groups that want to kill us. That is not a good thing. And so the question is, what effort is the governor going to bring forward, and how much is he going to book to savings in those areas? That's what the people of Minnesota want to see. This proposal is to take another $6+ billion from them and not address the holes that are in the barrel all over the place, dripping their money out onto the roadway and into the ditch with the 10 feet of snow that we got yesterday, or 10 inches of snow, excuse me. I guess that wasn't a question, Commissioner, but a frustration. I hope you bring that back to the governor as he works on his budget. We need to have that addressed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You highlighted the $440 million in tax cuts going back to hardworking Minnesotans. And I'm curious, I've seen in other parts of their presentation, investment in child care, investment in housing, investment in health care for low-income Minnesotans. I'm wondering if you could touch on what the cumulative impact for helping families' budgets are of some of these investments.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, thank you. I think one of the keys is overall we believe that we're providing, as you mentioned, about $440 million in these tax advantages. For example, a working family credit is one that really needed to be expanded for those families with three or more children, and that's a $20 million increase in 2021 and another $20 million in 22 and 23. But another really important working family credit expansion is to help offset any increases in the gasoline tax that may incur. That's an $81 million program in 20 and 21 and a $82 million program in 22 and 23. But we're also trying to reduce Social Security income. We want to increase the number of seniors who don't pay Social Security tax. Local government, and in addition to the local government tax exemption for construction materials, we also extend that to nonprofits as well. And another important area is that we've really tried to provide an opportunity for our farmers. I think the buffer tax credit is to help farmers support implementing the buffer law, and that's about $15 million in 20 and 21. But one of the things that I think is really, being a small business, someone who ran a small business for a while, one of the things that I find really helpful for small businesses and farmers is the Section 179 increase. By allowing that in full, we will provide about $222 million in 20 and 21 into giving farmers and small business people, all business people, the opportunity to write off a lot more right up front with the Section 179 expensing provision, which will really put a lot of dollars right back into the small businesses in this state.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Commissioner. You know, on the topic of debt, and I just want to ask for your, maybe it's your assessment, but on the capital investment chart, if the governor had his way and we came to grips with a $1.27 billion capital investment project, What's the debt service on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's about $75 million. As you may recall, we forecasted a bonding bill this session of a little over $200 million. I forget the exact amount, but we assumed that there'd be, what was it?
$255.
So the additional $75 million is for that incremental cost from the $265 up to the $1.27, although the $1.27 is not all general fund supported, but most about $1.1 billion of the $1.2 billion is general fund supported.
Mr. Chair, and to the Commissioner, then on the following spreadsheet for general fund expenditures by bill area, we talk about debt service and other, and just my simple math calculation talks about a 6% increase in the proposed debt service. Most family budgets, and we've alluded to that around the table over the course of the last hour or so, are worried about the debt service that they personally carry. They can't print more money. In the context of a balanced budget, it confines what we can do in terms of debt service. It would appear to me like we are running a little bit ahead of schedule in terms of debt service, in terms of our ability to pay it back, and I have a follow-on question for the Commissioner as well. But how do we attribute to, you know, an explanation for a 6% increase in the debt service?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, that's a biennial number. So what you're seeing is, so it's about a little over $700 million annually, and then obviously that's how you get to $1.4 billion. So if you look at it, it's really about a 3% on an annual, somewhere around 3% on an annual budget basis, which has been historically, I mean, We can get more exact numbers for you, but that's kind of where we've been for a long time.
You know, one of the things, Commissioner, thank you, Mr. Chair, that the new Commissioner Anderson Kelleher talked about at the presentation of the governor's budget was a desire to use some of the surplus towards debt service. Could you explain a little bit more in terms of your thinking in terms of how that came about and what purposes or what areas that debt service repayment would go towards, as she was availing it to in the presentation?
Mr. Friend.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure I understand. We certainly know that for the governor's bonding bill, that this would increase the debt service there. And I think there's some assumptions about what would go into the additional highway transit or transportation funds, but I'm not sure if she was talking about something different than what I'm looking at. I'm just not sure. I'm sorry. I'll get that for you.
Finally, Mr. Chair,
for the question. You were on this point.
Mr. Chair, I could potentially help Representative Albright with this. You know, if you think about the trunk highway bonds as a credit card, we're at the maximum. Representative Houseman spoke about this earlier. So in order to have more bonding capacity, we would have to use a portion of the fee on motor fuels for that purpose. We did that the last time in 2008 when we had a comprehensive transportation bill. So, Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I think that's what she was focusing on.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Hornstein. I think that's exactly, and I probably phrased the question a little bit oddly, but I appreciate your response. But it serves to a greater point that I'm trying to maybe convey to the Commissioner and to the administration. We're borrowing, and we continue to borrow, and I understand if you want to talk about investing in our future as opposed to, but sooner or later those bills they come due. And whether you prorate them over a 20-year period or not, if you suffer through any type of an economic downturn or a malaise, or as we've seen, a departure of tax-paying citizens to other states, the debt-paying serviceability is being capped up, and this is symptomatic, I think, of a larger consideration that we need to undertake in terms of when is enough borrowing enough borrowing, because sooner or later we've got to pay those debts. And my concern is, as we go forward, that we not only, as Representative Vogel and I have shared over the last couple of bieniums, I think there needs to be a cognitive effort made to understand what debt service costs the state with regard to other programs, whether that be education, whether that be HHS, which are continuously fighting for the necessary funding to educate our kids, but also take care of every Minnesotan. So I'll leave it, and you can certainly op-ed as well as I've done right now, but I do think that going forward, I would like to see more engagement on an understanding of what borrowing costs the state, and whether that we enact, you know, as Representative Vogel has done, and I've shared in that desire to help the public appreciate where their dollars are going and what it costs, notwithstanding, you know, low interest rates, as the chair of this committee has certainly argued for from time to time about the rate of interest. But that rate of interest has to be paid, whether it's high or low. And so it costs something to borrow money. And whether you take a look at the revenue coming in or you talk to the rating agencies, I think the citizens of Minnesota deserve a more frank and honest conversation about we're borrowing money and it's going to cost something. And that cost continues to go up. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner, did you want to respond?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, you'll always find me ready and able to sit down and talk about debt and debt capacity and what we can afford. I couldn't agree more that we as a state want to make sure that we manage this really effectively. But I do want to remind everyone that in addition to the limits in terms of the sheer dollar amount of authorized or the sheer amount of those obligations that we've sold, we also have a measure that makes sure that we're paying it off over a certain time period between 20 years or so. We have to keep. So as much as these numbers are changing, we're paying off these things, these bonds on a regular basis too. But anyway, I agree that we need to make sure that from an overall standpoint, what can we afford and what do we feel comfortable with? It's a great discussion to have, and I appreciate the comment.
Yeah, I indicated we had until 12:45, and I'm not sure if another committee is coming in at that time. So we've done. We've got two people on the list, so if they can be kind of brief, so we can get the room cleaned out. Representative Lilly, and then Representative Hausman, and then we're going to adjourn. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. I'll be as quick as I can. Commissioner Franz, thank you for re-upping. You've really done a great job and your team, and I think that shows with the product in the last few years. I don't have personally the credit rating that Representative Davids has, but I've really been trying to up mine, and I just realized how important that is, as you know, like a family. But you know what you've done in the last few years, you know, the whole under the leadership, the AAA bonding, really having that and other solid stability, I think is really actually, as a legislator, is one of my kind of things I actually campaign on. I do a little bit of a wonk on some of that stuff, which surprised me. I'm not a Vogel or any of that, but I think it's something we all can be really proud of. The reserves too is another thing that I didn't think is important, but you know, as you serve longer and longer, you know, I was here, I haven't been through as many cycles as Representative Carlson, but you realize how bad it is for all of us, any of us that care about our great state of times of deficit. So to have some reserves is just a nice thing, and the Walls team has preserved some of that, so that's very important, and who knows what happens later this week, but having some is a lot better than starting at zero. I just find this to be a very honest budget. You know, if you care about education, if you care about so many things about this state, these potholes we're talking about, I think it's really an honest discussion. You know, some of it is, you know, shocking, I think, so, you know, when you're different areas, you know, I mean, there is some cost related to it, but it's honest, so I value that. On the bonding question, I'm a little bit like in the last couple of years, Representative Torgelson's kind of gotten to me and on just the honesty about that too, about fixing the roofs on the bond. When he was bonding chair, he said, hey, let's fix what we have. And I've kind of embraced that in my kind of mantra as a bonding member. And I hope we do a bonding bill. I was disappointed to hear that Representative Graffel feels there'll be nothing. But again, that's a little bit of a boring thing to say that I care about putting good roofs on the University of Minnesota or our Minsky campuses. But really, that is important. And Representative Torgelson, thank you for kind of educating me on that. And I think that's important to all of us. So I hope we do pass something. Anyways, those are more comments than questions.
Okay, and I was just informed that the next committee is in the hallway, and they are due to take the room at 12:45. So Representative Hausman, very quickly.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Albright's comments made me realize we have to have the commissioner back, because the debt service that the Commissioner of Transportation is talking about is not something she's proposing to borrow. It's to pay for what we did the last 4 years. So that speech would have had to be made the last 4 years. Representative Governor Walz actually is proposing we pay as we go with new revenue. But what we did the last 4 years is now what the commissioner is needing to pay for. And I think this committee needs to have an understanding of what happened.
And Representative Hausman, the commissioner will be back because the forecast comes out on Thursday, and he'll be back and bring us up to date on that, and then some other things. Representative Torkelson, did you very quickly?
Very quickly, Commissioner, we know that a bunch of general fund revenue is taken out of transportation. How much of the gas tax increase will be required just to cover that general fund revenue plus the aid revenue that you talked, or aid to families that you talked about a little bit earlier?
Mr. Chair, I believe to take the dedicated out, I think it's like 5 cents would be enough to cover Is it seven? I knew it was five or
plus
six.
Plus another $160 million.
If you knew the answer, why did you ask me the question?
For the record.
I understand. No. So the part of that, the 6 or 7 cents, whatever it is, is the gas tax needed to take care of the dedicated amount, yes.
Yeah, I'd like to thank everyone. We do have to adjourn, so meeting adjourned. Thank you.